Hi there, and welcome back to the Prepare Podcast. The Prepare Podcast is a Salvation Army podcast where we invite women of faith in the ministry to share their experiences and wisdom to prepare and equip us in our faith pursuits and callings. I'm your host, Sarah McCullough, and this month's episode focuses on the ministry of the ARC, Adult Rehabilitation Centers. Most Salvationists have a basic understanding of the ARC, but I can say with certainty this ministry is more complex and in-depth than most will ever know. Today, ARC Administrator Major Julie Aaron joins me to share three, if you knew the ARC you would know, insights to help us have a better understanding of the ministry and life at the ARC. We discuss what it takes to be an ARC officer and employee, and let me tell you firsthand, it's unlike any other job you'll experience. No day is the same. Major Julie also shares how she's grown as a leader and what has impacted her along the way. Enjoy episode 24 with Major Julie Aaron. The ARC, the Adult Rehabilitation Center, is the frontline ministry of the Salvation Army. This ministry requires stamina, lots of character, and passion. Most Salvationists don't have a clue what this ministry is really like. Many of us have seen testimonial videos from men and women who have graduated the ARC program, but that's often the extent of our knowledge. Welcome to the Prepare Podcast, Major Julie Aaron.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me, Sarah.
You're welcome. I invited you on because, one, you are a strong leader in the Salvation Army, and two, you are a co-administrator with your husband at an ARC, and you've been doing ARC ministry for like 15 years?
13.
13, okay.
Close.
Yep. A good amount of time.
Yes.
And to become experts in this ministry, and I think that not a lot of Salvationists have a real good knowledge of really the ministry that takes place in the adult rehabilitation centers. And I'm hoping that in our time together that you can give our listeners an inside perspective of the ARC ministry and share with us the most recent changes for the ARC in Chicago,
yes.
Which includes combining mm-hmm. two centers mm-hmm. and then making a brand new women's center on the north side.
Yes.
So, but before we get into all that, I want our listeners to learn about who Major Julie
okay.
is. So right. I'm just going to pass it over to you and ask you to introduce yourself to our listeners.
All right. My name is Julie Aaron. I am the child of officer parents who had various appointments in the Central Territory. So I grew up in the Salvation Army right from the very inception. I have two sisters and a brother. I graduated from high school in Minnesota. I probably consider Minnesota my home simply because out of all of my 50-some years on earth, I've lived there the longest. I graduated high school there, went to nursing school there, got married there, had my first child there, fell in love with St. Paul Temple and all of its soldiers, where my parents were when we moved there. They were assigned to that corps and then, of course, moved on and I stayed. So I consider Minnesota my home. After we had children, we realized that, whoa, family is important. Didn't really, you know, Minnesota's kind of far away. And my parents didn't necessarily want to follow them because I knew they would move. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to provide our children with some stability within the Salvation Army and family. So we moved back to Detroit, where John's parents, he grew up in the Salvation Army as well. Parents weren't officers, but lifelong soldiers. Mm-hmm. And we wanted some stability, so we uprooted as soon as I think Rachel was 6 months old and moved to Michigan. So that was sort of a change for us. We attended Dearborn Heights for a short while, which I think you did as well.
Yeah, I think we might have overlapped.
Yeah, yeah.
For a time.
Yep. And we were there maybe 6 months, and when a tragedy happened in Minnesota, our very, very close friends, Joel and Joan Lilliquist, were tragically murdered, if you remember hearing that, in 1987. And they were kind of our closest friends as married couples. We did things a lot together. And that really uprooted us. That really caused us to question our faith, evaluate where we were at in life, what we wanted. And we really kind of felt like God wanted us to do something more. Not that we weren't serving God, not that we weren't following God. I was working as a nurse, and my husband was doing in some computer work, fixing computers, selling computers, that kind of thing. So we just, it kind of shook us up. It caused us really evaluate our faith, and that's when we decided, after a very close coinciding request from the divisional commander in Eastern Michigan at that time, Clarence Harvey, to ask us to help fill in at a corps, which kind of took us by surprise. But again, it was in that same time frame of grieving Joel and Joan and questioning what God wanted us to do. And we said yes. And within 2 days of being at Brightmoor Corps, I knew that that was what I needed to be doing for the rest of my life. Even though I love nursing, I really felt fulfilled. Just the experience of the Salvation Army, working its mission, made me feel like I was at home.
What years were you at Brightmoor?
87 and 88.
Was my grandma there then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. She was one of my original Home League ladies.
Oh, yeah.
Home League, because it's not called that anymore. That's
right.
Why I said original.
Sure.
I still remember picking her up off Telegraph.
Mm-hmm.
Telegraph, what street did she live?
Vern.
That's right.
Yeah. Still there.
Yeah.
Okay. So when did you guys go into training?
1989. Yep. I guess I said 87, 88, but we went right from Brightmoor right mm-hmm. into training in
sure.
1989.
Yeah. When did you get your first ARC appointment?
2004. We had had core ministry for 10 years, both rural and urban. And out of the blue, the then field secretary, Brock Six, came to see us and did a little review, a little evaluation, and asked us, you know, what our goals were, really kind of honed down on, well, what are your short-term goals? What are your long-term goals? And he, Harry, even said to John, I can see you doing this.
Yeah.
And we had always thought that that might be something we would want, but never really, you know, gave it too much thinking mm-hmm. process. So at that point, we said, yeah, I think let's try this, John. And he said, yeah, let's try this, Julie. Let's see. Mm-hmm. Let's do this. And it's been wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things just keep getting better. Like I told you when we were 2 days at Brightmoor, I'm home. Mm-hmm. Well, I got into the ARC, and after 2 days, I'm home. I never want to do anything else. I hope the Salvation Army leaves me here forever.
Wow. Is it hard as an officer to, like, they asked you what your goals were? Is it hard to set goals as an officer knowing that things, like,
yeah.
in a lot of ways you don't have control over
yes,
the
yes,
future?
Yes, it is. I was able to set, though, personal and professional goals, not that they're not intertwined, but I am a nurse, and so because of all it took me to get there, I don't want to ever give up that piece.
Yeah.
And I can always use things that I've used and learned in the past. So I would always want to keep my nursing license up to date, always go back and learn skills that I've lost or need to be refreshed on. And then, of course, professional in the Salvation Army, taking every opportunity for all of the educational opportunities that they provide mm-hmm. for us on a regular basis.
Okay. Well, let's start learning a bit more about the ARC. There's
yes.
a format that our listeners are familiar with when I ask our guests to share three things that would help us get to know them better. And it goes like this. If you knew me, you would know. But you're gonna answer from the perspective of the ARC.
Okay.
So it'll be like this. If you knew the ARC, you would know. So then you fill in the blank.
Okay.
Go ahead.
If you knew the ARC, you would know that we're a whole lot more than stores. The stores are our bread and butter. The stores what bring in the money for us to run our program, but we're a whole lot more than stores. We're a 6 to 12 month Christian-based work therapy, drug and alcohol rehabilitation. That's what I would want people to know.
Can you expand on that just a little bit more? Because I know in not every center, but in a handful, it's for women and men.
Yes. We provide a rehabilitation program for those that have a struggle with drugs and alcohol, and we keep them long term, 6 to 12 months. They live in our building. They do work therapy in the stores during the day, and then they're with us in the evening for classes, alcohol education, drug education, relapse prevention, life skills, Christian living, all Christian based, of course, and that's what separates us from every rehab down rehab row, mm-hmm. is that we're Jesus centered. And we are work therapy.
That's unique.
Yes, it is. So what I would want someone else to know is about the ARC is be real careful when you refer people to us. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of referrals regularly for people that really cannot do work therapy. We can find another place for them, but we are work therapy. So a man or a woman coming to us needs to perform work therapy tasks beyond their
physically.
Feet. Yes, lift a certain. So we, a lot of times from internally, the Salvation Army, we get referrals from people that are disabled or have other limitations that disqualify them. And then so I would want people to know when they send people to us that they're they're sending, they're screening, they're following up in knowing what we're all about.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you'll touch on this too, but I think it's important to know that the ARC program is also free.
Yes. Yes. There's nothing. We do not charge anything, again, because we're self-supporting. Mm-hmm. All of our stores, and in Chicago there are 20 stores currently, and after we pay for the lights and the heating and all of our wonderful employees, the rest come back to the center to support this incredible program that we're able to provide.
Okay. So what is the next thing? If you knew the ARC, you would know.
I would want somebody to know that in the program, is my congregation. Is my flock, mm-hmm. is the people that I minister to. And coming to us, there are incredible spiritual needs because men and women have just, been ignored a lot of their needs for so long, and then they come to us. And so we have this wonderful opportunity to make a flock, to make a congregation, and to minister to the specific needs. It's nice when they decide that they want to stay and be soldiers, but that doesn't always happen. We want them to be able to get back into the churches where they came from and get back into society and be fully functioning members, giving back just as they were given.
And on those Sunday mornings when you gather for worship,
there's no place like our church.
Yeah? Tell me about it.
Oh, my goodness. On vacation or when I'm away from the ARC, it just always seems dry to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just always miss the I need a miracle God today if I'm going to survive till tomorrow. There's just always this incredible reaching out, mm-hmm. this incredible dependence and energies necessary to, I need this miracle God, mm-hmm. Work through my life, help me. Forgive me. Help me be what I need to be.
Mm-hmm. And their family members are welcome to come on those Sundays. Is that
yes,
true?
Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, Chicago will have been the fourth ARC that I've been privileged to be stationed at. And there are a lot of visitors that come here in Chicago, mm-hmm. Which is kind of neat to see, families mm-hmm. and children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One other thing mm-hmm. that I would
oh,
want,
yeah.
I would want my fellow officers to know about the ARC is it's not the dark side. Believe it or not, when John and I went into the ARC in 2004, I had two very close friends, officer friends, that say, oh, you're going to the dark side. Excuse me?
What do they mean by that?
Probably that we're kind of leaving the security of having a congregation and ministering to a congregation to more of a business model, and it being, you know, that's why I said earlier in one of my originals, it's not just a store. Mm-hmm. It's not just a store. Yes, that's what feeds us. That's our bread and butter. But it's this ministry that we're able to have to 100, 125, mm-hmm. 150 men and women at any given time.
Yeah.
So it's not all business.
Mm-hmm.
And business and spiritual go together anyway if you make it that way. So I would want to know that it's my fellow officers, it's a very fulfilling ministry. It's incredible. It's something that it's very special and very important to me. And I feel privileged to be able to minister in and would never want to do anything else. But if the Salvation Army asked me to do something else, of course I would. But I just feel like I've arrived.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I see it. Also, there's two different kind of ministries there too, or maybe even more than that, is the ministry to the beneficiaries,
mm-hmm.
and then also all the employees,
yes,
at the stores.
Exactly. Exactly. Like this Sunday we're having a picnic, mm-hmm. an employee picnic. And there's an incredible amount of need with the employee base. We have 650 employees right now, and it seems like every time I go out to check on a store with my husband or just him on a casual, mm-hmm. you know, check with him, there'll be a couple employees that will come forward and have just incredible needs, mm-hmm. overwhelming needs, and I'm able to share and pray with them. So it's a fulfilling, yes, totally.
And then the third piece of that is the customers.
Yes.
The interaction with the customers.
Yes.
For the customers, sometimes that's their only interaction with the Salvation Army,
yes.
at all.
So when they complain, you're kidding, you got to be kidding me, this button-down shirt is $4.99, then I have a chance to say, yes, it is. And do you know where your money goes to?
Yeah. Here's why.
Here's why it goes to help 100, 125, 150 men and women in long-term recovery,
mm-hmm.
at the Salvation Army, that building right over there, you know, the one on 506 North Des Plaines or 2258 North Clybourne.
Yeah, it's such a huge ministry. So, okay, the next, let's hear one more. If you knew the ARC, you would know.
If you knew the ARC, I would want you to know again that I don't just sit around and sort jewelry all day.
Did my grandma used to do that,
yes.
for you?
Yes, she did. She did. It just seems like a perception. You know,
okay.
I had I don't think that people understand totally what we're about,
mm-hmm.
And that the ministry piece is so, so important and so in your face. I don't know. I think people just think that I sort jewelry or do that kind of thing all day long, where it's just on the street kind of ministry, helping those that are in most need.
So,
does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I know your day after day looks different.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe an average day for you?
Sure. I'm not an early morning person. My husband is,
uh-huh.
but he runs most of the business aspect, and I try to focus on the program. I figure it's, we just kind of, you know, have
divide
it all covered.
Conquer.
Yeah, divide and conquer, totally. So he does the business piece, and I do more of the program piece. And as I mentioned earlier, we're a work therapy program. So our beneficiaries is what we call them, our clients, because they benefit from our services. They're working in the stores or in the kitchen or in the phone room. So I don't normally do too much during the day, but I would go in the afternoon and, you know, if there are prospects or I need to answer phone calls explaining our program or work with the staff, but I need to be really there when they get off work therapy. That's when they're needed the most, having supper with them together, all sitting around, and then making sure that the programming in the evening speaks to holistic needs physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So I tend to work afternoons into the evening just to make sure that everything's covered. And we have a wonderful staff,
mm-hmm.
That do a lot. And then I always pitch in when, of course, there are holes.
And so you have how many? You have counselors.
Mm-hmm.
You have what other kind of roles take place at the ARC?
Intake is big.
That's for where the beneficiaries come in for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. We have resident managers, monitors of the house, and counselors. we're privileged right now with the consolidation that happened last summer to have a program manager at Des Plaines and a program manager in Clybourne. So just kind of managing the program, making sure that everything is, you know, again, we're ministering to the holistic needs and making sure that we have enough counselors to do spiritual counseling. Mm-hmm. And we were just reminded of this last week. We're not treatment. We're not clinically based. So we have to be careful that we don't represent ourselves to the community as treatment. We're not treatment at all. But we are a rehabilitation. We have counselors that do spiritual counseling primarily. That's our overall focus. And then, of course, hone in on the various needs that come with recovery. Mm-hmm. And long-term recovery.
So can you share with me this most recent update of, because for a time when the merge happened, there was the north side.
Right.
And then central. Mm-hmm. And central housed men and women. Mm-hmm. But you've recently merged for the men to all be at central.
Yes.
And the women to be on north sides. Can you talk a bit about what that's
sure.
been like? And
sure.
Yeah.
I moved to Chicago, it'll be 6 years ago. And right away, noted that I was 3 miles from another ARC. And so I just kind of set out in my mind just to observe and to note, you know, some of the similarities, some of the differences, and also noting the customer needs at that point because, there are some customers shop at all the stores mm-hmm. in Chicago and, you know, we kind of have to be on the same page and be doing similar things. So noting the customer sometimes dissatisfaction and also seeing beneficiaries go back and forth.
From one center
yes.
to another?
I always wondered, what would it be like if it was just one center? If mm-hmm. we could totally merge this together and work the program, would it help? Would it hinder customers, beneficiaries? I was just always interested in that. Could we really perfect our finances? Mm-hmm. Would our finances be more responsible? Our financial, situation, mm-hmm. would it look more responsible and, you know, not only in theory, but in practice, you know, could we conserve? Could we bring things together? And fortunately, that was decided as last summer that they would consolidate both centers. So that's what happened last June. So we're almost going into a year. And so when I got to Central, 506, which is on 506 Des Plaines, I was obviously noted immediately that men and women were together in recovery. Now, while this does work, it's not ideal. Mm-hmm. In fact, sometimes I think it's a little harmful to long-term recovery. So right away, based on my experience in Grand Rapids and in Detroit, I thought, you know, maybe we would get the best of both worlds since we're to have two centers now. One could be needs specific to women. One could be minister needs specific to men. So fortunately, I was in school as well doing some nursing work and was asked to do some research into needs specific to women in recovery. So I knew by doing that it would help not only on the school front but on the work front. Mm-hmm. And I was able to really note some major differences. You know, addiction is addiction. Rehabilitation is rehabilitation. Addiction is cunning, powerful, and baffling. If we would have figured this thing out, we would have figured it out a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So there are needs specific to the entire population, but there are also needs specific, gender specific. With women, we noted it was a lot of trauma, and it was also ignored, put on the side caregiver roles kind of thing. Women will come in for rehab. They'll wait longer. They generally take care of the children. They generally take care of the home front. So they'll wait a lot longer before they seek help, which usually means they'll be a lot sicker when they surface at our place, mentally, physically. And so it was the caregiver roles that we knew we needed to work on with women. and the trauma-based recovery model. So, you know, again, we're not treatment, but we're very blessed to have counselors with that kind of expertise. So we work at it from a spiritual base because we are a Jesus program, mm-hmm. Jesus work therapy program. But we work on it, allowing us to then hone in on a trauma and caregiver roles with women. And we're just new to that, so I can't speak long term on how it's going. We just opened March 20th of this year, so we're just a little over 2 months mm-hmm. old, converting the center on Claiborne to women.
And how did everyone receive this change? Was it excited? Was it just
yes.
like a hard transition?
No, it was good. It was all good. It was all positive. Took a little time to, you know, put the package together mm-hmm. to work out the budget and to, you know, really kind of present the program to get all the approvals in place and passed. Mm-hmm. That was a little bit of work, but it was also, you know, fulfilling because you're sitting down working on goals and objectives with your staff and you're working on various you're working to present things that you know is going to help you as you go along.
Okay. What is your referral base? How do you know who's going to be coming in? Is it the same people or what does that look like?
That's a very good question, Sarah. We kind of feel like we're in a bit of a cultural change right now, meaning that the men primarily who have used our services for years are getting older, perhaps even dying off. Hmm. That might sound kind of crude, but we're just having to always perfect our referral a network. We always have to work on our referral base, make sure people know what we're about, you know, revisit judges, revisit social service agencies, revisit churches. This is what we are. This is what we are, you know, all the time. So we get referrals, not so much from walk-ins anymore, okay. like has been the history. We've been able to always rely on a high census by walk-ins. And I'm telling you, walk-ins aren't like they were. We've had to really work on our referral network. And so we get referrals from everywhere now. We have a relationship with the Department of Corrections in Indiana who really uses us a lot. We've had women come from Wisconsin this year, and South Bismarck, North Dakota has sent us 2 women. So I think it's just getting the word out. But knowing that addiction is not a respecter of persons as well. Addiction is, again, cunning, powerful, baffling. It hits us all. Each one of us knows somebody mm-hmm. in our immediate family who struggles with addiction, and then the circle goes out. So we have doctors in our program. We've had lawyers. You know, your typical first impression of somebody that's struggling with drugs and alcohol is not the street person, not somebody hovering in a corner with a bottle in their pocket. I'm telling you, it's no respecter of persons, male, female, income, education. It hits everyone. Now, sometimes we at the Salvation Army see them a little longer, a little later in the recovery process because they've tried everything else.
Yeah.
You know, but our program really seems this long-term spiritual-based behavior, working with behavior. Again, we're not treatment, but the long-term process of working with somebody for 6 to 12 months opens a door to huge possibilities. And we're not a 28-day program.
Right.
It takes a while. And then seeing men and women complete and become alumni is probably, I saw on your page, that's one of the questions. That's one of the highlights.
Yeah.
Is to have somebody complete your program.
So that's one, if you were to name some of your joys
yes,
in the appointment.
Completing the program, mm-hmm. seeing them long term, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, doing well, reconciling with family, getting jobs, you know, getting their driver's license back, And going, you know, just reintegrating into society, that's the biggest plus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, we get close to them and we'd like to see them back often. But if you don't see them and you know they're doing good, that's the best thing in the world.
Because mm-hmm. they've in many ways moved on mm-hmm. and are back in society
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm. helping the next person.
Yeah, hopefully living a full life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what's would be the most challenging part of ARC ministry?
Relapse.
Yeah.
Relapse. Addiction is a disease of relapse. It's often marked by relapse. So I remembered, you know, the first couple of years it being very hard. As we've learned about relapse, learned that we learn from relapse when you get, you know, you get down, but you get back up. Keep your head up. You just keep walking. You learn from your mistakes. You're able to capture. I didn't focus on this enough before. Let's relook at this. Let's revisit this. Let's work harder on this time. And as long as relapse isn't final, you know, get up, keep going, learn from it, and go from there. Mm-hmm. But that's the hardest thing when you hear that somebody's fallen off and is in trouble. That's the hardest part.
So what does the turnover look like coming through? What does the turnover look like for individuals coming through treatment?
We, I don't have an exact number for you, but I do know that the success, however you measure success, mm-hmm. you can't measure it quantitatively.
Yeah.
You can't tell me I've been clean and sober for 10 months, so I'm successful. You have to really look at qualitatively. You have to, you know, identify emerging themes, and you have to really say, my life is different today because of, you know, various things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a hard question. Success is really hard to measure. Success, of course, in the AANA community, you know, isn't high. You know, you get a little discouraged by low numbers. But the last time we really took the time to look at numbers, we thought maybe about 18% were successful. Again, mm-hmm. success is hard to measure, so we have to be really careful. But those that I would say have gone through our program are clean and sober long-term meaning greater than 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. 3 years, yes. 5 years, woo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is around 18%. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
That's hard.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Because addiction is cunning, powerful, and baffling. Mm-hmm. Again, we don't all understand it. It's difficult, but we have to.
What do you do for yourself to stay, to not lose or to maintain your stamina, to maintain your passion? How do you take care of yourself so that you're a strong minister?
Mm-hmm. It's important to, again, stay grounded. So I have to have an outlet for myself outside of work it's work and during the week and then Sunday as well and oftentimes Saturdays because Saturdays is our busiest store day. You know, so I just have to really make sure that I capitalize on downtime, take time off during the week or in the evening when I need to. Do soul care, like you talked about at, I think, Territorial Women's Conference a couple years mm-hmm. back, that theme on soul care, that's been very, very helpful. Self-care, you know, am I eating right? Am I getting enough sleep? Do I have enough out time with my husband? Am I surrounding myself? Do I have friends outside of work? Just so that support is visible.
Do you have, like you said, have an outlet? Do you have like a hobby or something that you like to do?
That's an interesting question because I just got done with, I've been in school for 2 years. And so I've finished my bachelor's of science in nursing, which I wanted to do ever since I graduated from a hospital program in 1980. So I was kind of hijacked my time outside of work. But I'm looking forward because I like to bike. My husband and I like to bike together. We have a tandem, and that is our therapy. That's our marriage therapy. And I like to read nonfiction, historical nonfiction, and I like to play the piano. So those three things I'm looking forward to getting back to. And I really love having my children call me for various things. I have a 28-year-old son and a 30-year-old daughter. And so even though they're a little bit older, I like to think that I could be available to them whenever they need me or want me. And they both live in Chicago. How blessed is that?
You guys are having a
good
season.
So I have the perfect world right now. Perfect. And I need to remember that, right?
Yeah. What experiences before this appointment has helped prepare you for it?
Experiences, probably some of my nursing experience in terms of caring for the sick. My nursing really comes in handy. Even though we're not a medical facility, I can always tell if somebody needs a trip to the emergency room or not, or if they're trying to put one over on me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if there's various things going on in the house that I can speak to, do health education. Again, I find that the women are typically sicker when they come in because they wait.
They've prolonged it
because they want to keep their house together. They want to keep their children intact. And so they've waited till the very last, and they're always very, very sick. So just kind of helping them work through physical things, that's come in very, very handy. I would say my nursing background has been very, very helpful. Even though, again, the ARC is not a medical facility, that's been helpful. And then as well, having other core appointments that were both rural and urban has been helpful in the growth process. I was able to go to the national conference for women at the United Nations in 2013, which at the time I wondered why I, you know, because I just had men at the time. Well, what can I get out of this, Lord? But I took lots of notes and learned a lot of things, and Who knew that five years later, I would again be able to open a women's program in Chicago.
But this wasn't your first experience in a women's program, right?
Nope. I helped open the women's program in Grand Rapids, which again, I sensed the need. There wasn't women there at the time, but we were able to open that. And the men and women are housed together at that facility, but they keep very strict and good control. Not ideal, but it's
right.
Real.
Like separate. And, yeah. It's separate, but.
Yeah. And then we were able to work closely in Detroit in the whole approval process and the planning to separate men and women. They didn't have women in Detroit, excuse me, to open, close Romulus for men and reopen it for women. And Detroit and Chicago have a very close, very, very close-knit relationship right now with men and women. We rely on each other a lot, call each other a lot. You know, what are you doing for this? What's best in this situation? Can you help me on this? And we have a lot of good collaboration and cooperation.
Can you share a few examples of what those phone calls would look like? What kind of advice you would be seeking?
Have you tried, how long do you do anger management? And at what point do you move into domestic violence? Because that's always a question we tackle with. We have 18 weeks of mandatory anger management. Is it necessary to continue based on, you know, evidence based from the women who have completed? Should we continue that or even move into domestic violence? And that can be for men as well.
Mm-hmm. What would that domestic violence, it's like a course or what would that include look like?
Certified generally by the state for that. And it's mainly just carrying on with the anger management piece, just working through some more difficult concepts in terms of anger management.
What other kind of questions would you call each other for?
Real specific programmatic kinds of things, like what's your restriction period? Or we have to discharge this woman for this. What do you suggest in terms of out time before they can come back? Or have you experienced this before? And then just some very practical things like, you know, bed bug issues and fraternization policies and such.
Between beneficiary and employees.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No, I think these are a lot of topics that the average listener or Salvationist that is a part of the Army but isn't familiar with the ARC wouldn't think of all these really individual needs that come up in terms of kind of specializing the program for a person, like you said, like should they go into their anger management class extend or
right. Just recently in April we had a open house where we invited all of our service providers and those that do a lot of referrals with us. We wanted them to see the women's program. We wanted to see them to see 2258 North Clybourne. And we had, I think, 59 that came. Out of those 59, 14 represented agencies. And out of those 14, four of those agencies told us they need a place for the transgender population in terms of referral after treatment. See, ideally, we should be a seamless transition between treatment and rehab. They should be able to come right to us from treatment.
From treatment.
And so some of these providers were telling us, this is our need. This is a very much an underserved population right now. What do you see in the future? So we would like to work perhaps having a dorm for trans women and a dorm for trans men. I know that's kind of new, but we're working through some dynamics to perhaps be able to serve the population that's most needed. That's what William Booth would have done.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, again, addiction is not a respecter of persons. It includes everybody. And so we want to kind of capture where our referral base is currently and what's most needed out there on the streets.
Can you share how you've grown as a leader through through officership and through this specific ministry you've been a part of? Like, here's a thought. Like, would Julie in 2004, who just got started in ARC ministry, be how would she react to the modern day Julie?
Okay. I got you on that one. I'm a little more aware and maybe streetwise, street savvy. You know, you probably would have got a lot over
past,
me.
Past
back
you?
Into, yeah. No. You know, and I kind of go back. Our first appointment was in Des Moines at the Des Moines ARC. We were only there for a year, but it was all methamphetamine, pretty much about 85 to 90%. That just taught me a lot. But I will sometimes go back in my brain and think, do you remember when you did this, when you let this guy back in a little too early? You know, do you think you were helping him or hindering him? Or do you remember, you know, how you allowed this to get by you, you know, either passively or actively? So I think I'm pretty much, you know, I'm pretty much there. I know where I can tell where people are if they're, you know, where they're going and how to help them. I just feel, I guess, a little maturity that maybe doesn't necessarily come with age. Experience. Mm-hmm. And experience is the best teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I feel like I have grown a lot, that I know a lot about addiction through just working this last, you know, 13 years.
Is it hard for you? I mean, because I feel like there, you know, people will maybe use like the phrase tough love when it comes to dealing with someone with addiction. How do you manage that? Like, do you believe in that kind of philosophy?
Yes, I do.
And what does that look like?
It's doing the best thing for that person in that particular situation. And I always have to remove myself from the formula. It's not about me. Because I would tend to want to make things, the nursing part of me would come out. I think I want to make it all better. And it's not always going to be all better. But you got to make calls knowing what's best for the person. They have to feel sometimes the decision. They have to feel and see, I did this. And because I did this, I need to work through this, you know, I have to.
The consequences.
It's a process. Consequences, yes. Because if you let somebody, and there's quite a heated discussion about tough love. Some do not, you know, buy into that. Others do. But again, it's easy. It's easy when you have somebody with you 6 to 12 months to really begin to know them.
Yeah.
That's what's so wonderful, that it's not a 28-day program. You can start to really know somebody and to know, you know, from your conversations and to know as a team, if a decision somebody's making is not healthy, mm-hmm. and to question them on that.
For someone that is going through addiction, I think coming into the ARC program would be a huge life change. Mm-hmm. When is there a typical point in their process of that 6 to 9 months where you see that first like click, and the click meaning like just the initial change or a new acceptance of the situation?
Yeah, I think I know what you're saying. Obviously, the first month is difficult. And we were informed last week from our statistics that we have sometimes our average is low. That if somebody's going to leave our program, I
should
say.
Like completion?
Yeah. If somebody's going to leave our program, it's going to be in the first month. So we really have to capitalize on that first month and really kind of spend a little more time and draw them in and maybe have more counseling sessions, spiritual counseling sessions, and more focus on them and drawing up their plan, their goals and objectives, and really working. Then after that month, then, you know, it seems to me it's all individual, of course, because some people that, you know, you think it's going to take them a long time, they'll have that aha moment very quickly. And for some that you think, oh, they got this, you know, it might take a little longer. I think the spiritual piece helps incredibly. Because we're Christian-based, obviously, we have during the week 2 Bible studies. We have Christian living class. We have a Wednesday night midweek chapel service and a Sunday chapel service. So we have plenty of time, really, to share the gospel and pray with people and pursue, help them pursue a godly lifestyle.
So your staff, they have to have the same faith mm-hmm. as well mm-hmm. to make mm-hmm. it mm-hmm. make it a full program. Mm-hmm. So what are do you have a set of goals for the next 5+ years?
Yes, that's an interesting question. Because we were transferred from Grand Rapids 6 months after the women's program opened, and because we were transferred from Detroit when the women's program opened there, I would like to be able to stay here and watch long term, the plans that we have made, I'd like to watch them unfold, right? I'd like to see in a year, be able to do a yearly review in 2 years and see, okay, this is what we sat down in our original think tank sessions about women's program. Is this a reality? Is this coming true? Are we truly helping the female population? Are we really speaking to gender specific needs? So I think just reviewing that, and hopefully the Salvation Army, and if they don't, that's fine too. But I would like to be able to mm-hmm. stay to long-term observe the changes that we've made.
Mm-hmm. I would see that as a professional goal.
Yes.
Do you have any personal goals set up right now? And a personal goal might be relaxing because you've been through so much schooling lately.
Yes.
Like it can be a more relaxed goal.
Yes. We live in River North, not too far from the lake. So I really my have a physical goal of being more active again, like I had been when my husband and I were riding bikes a lot. Mm-hmm. That I kind of put that on hold for a couple years, and so I'm kind of looking forward to getting back, you know, shedding a few extra pounds that have accumulated. And but I also don't want to forget all of the wonderful things that I learned in school, which has helped. I can't believe, like I told you, that practicum that I did, that I had to go to the Women's Treatment Center and look at, you know, needs specific to women. I just couldn't believe how timely that was in terms of opening the women's program mm-hmm. within 3 or 4 months after I finished that project.
Mm-hmm. What kind of personality traits are needed to be an affected ARC administrator or employee?
I think the first is what you talked about, passion. I absolutely love what I do. So I think that helps.
Yeah.
I know that helps when you love your job, uh-huh. when you love what you do, when you're really buying into the mission, mm-hmm. you know, it helps. And I just have a passion to see men and women drug and alcohol free,
yeah.
And to know what it is to live life to its fullest, mm-hmm. you know. And I think the second would – you mentioned character too. I'm not sure that I'm – my character is exemplary.
There has to be some strength of character, because facing what you face at the ARC, whether it's like from the customer, the employee, yeah, to the beneficiary.
You just really have to keep it all centered, I think. It's easy to get overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Like you brought up an important piece that even escaped me as earlier, was all the employees, all the needs that could be representative with employee base. So, you know, you got your beneficiaries, you're trying to, you need the business piece, of course, for the store running, and, the beneficiaries. But you also need to be able to be comfortable. I need to be comfortable with myself, because I hire employees that are way more than I do, that are way above me, that have can articulate, can run things, can follow up, and they just run circles around me. And I just think that's so cool. In fact, just a month ago, I was sitting down at the table. We were in a staff meeting, and I was looking around me, and I thought, I've been dreaming about this for years, to have people sitting around a table that are experts in what they do. And if they're not experts, they're striving to be experts. And they just bring their own uniqueness to the team. And it's just, I think we have a perfect team right now. So I was just kind of gloating in this, I need to really enjoy this moment, because sitting around this table are, men and women with their certificate in drug and alcohol counseling, who've been to trauma training, that have just done various things that they're using to help our men and women in recovery. So I think you have to let people excel around you in as employees, and not think you got to do it all or know it all or be it all, because that's so not what it's all about.
Well, I think that's a big part of it, is being a good manager, because mm-hmm. to even be able to bring in those kind of employees and then retain them, is that's really tough to do. Mm-hmm. So that would fall under those kind of traits of what would make a successful, mm-hmm. however you measure that, administrator, mm-hmm. or employee, mm-hmm. like higher level employee in the ARC. Mm-hmm. So good management skills,
yes.
Passion,
yes.
Character. And then I mentioned one, and I
endurance.
Believe this, endurance and stamina.
Endurance is hard.
Like you said, you can become quickly overwhelmed.
Fortunately and or unfortunately, my husband is like a little road runner, right?
Uh-huh.
He doesn't stop. I need to stop.
Yeah.
So, and I can help force him. But I think between the two of us, we kind of have this perfect
fit. You really do.
Fit.
Yeah.
What he is, I'm not. What I'm not, he is. And then we can just, like you said earlier, conquer and divide.
Mm-hmm.
With my nursing skill and passion, it's helpful that I oversee the program piece. And with his business knowledge, mm-hmm. Interestingly, that's not what he's schooled in. Mm-hmm. He has his master's in pastoral counseling.
How about
but,
that?
But it's a perfect perfect right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm feel very fulfilled.
Well, it's from my experience at the ARC, it was a joy to watch you and your husband work together, and truly, you are a dream team.
Wow! Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Major Julie, for joining me and sharing your expertise in all things ARC with our listeners.
You're welcome.
Thanks again, Major Julie, for sharing with our listeners. Make sure you are following us on a podcast app so you receive notifications for each month's episode. Thanks again for listening.